Okay, so Kate, I have a
Okay.
question for you about this episode for us. Would you, if you could, voluntarily go back to being a teenager?
No.
That was the quickest response.
Think I was going to be like, maybe, or it feels like a very strong, easy no. Like, I didn't really need to ruminate on that.
Well, no, because something that I think is kind of interesting about this episode is the fact that as it's continuing before the mind wipe that happens at the end, which I think was a totally stupid plot move, by the way, real dumb, I thought that Jughead being forced to relive his life as a teenager maybe means that he would behave a little differently than he did. When he was a teenager on the show. And I just thought that was kind of interesting. Like, if I had the power to know what I know now, I think I would maybe relish being a teenager again and with sort of with my self-confidence as an older person.
Yeah, I have thought about that and then ultimately decided that the benefits do not outweigh the negatives.
Yeah.
Like, because I think about like how I've changed and what I know now, and I don't like it wouldn't change how other people behave.
No, it would only change how you behave.
Right, and I don't think having like more like confidence in myself or like knowledge of the world would make anything better.
Yeah,
Like, I think
actually.
being like, oh great, so I'm now even like smarter than I was then, so now I'm like annoying and I'm confident, so no one wants to like everyone's like, why are you so confident about this? Like, no one wants to hang out with that.
That's true. Also, like, the fact that's a really good point that your confidence would sort of betray
It can be
your social
off-putting.
abilities. And then also, like, it ties into to what happened this episode where Jughead, like, flat out, which I liked. I liked that move in the show, how he flat out told everybody what was going on and how they all laughed dismissively of him and it made Archie frightened.
You froze. Oh, no, you're back. Yeah, I think it would just be like, and like knowing world events and being like prophetic about it. Like, do I lie? Do I
Yeah.
pretend that I don't know, like, who's getting elected? Do I have an opportunity before I go back to look up sports scores and like take notes and then like go and cash in on it?
Yeah, Back to the Future style.
Yeah.
So here's my follow-up question. If you had the knowledge of as a teenager of the next 50 years and you were thrown into the 50s, would you try to prevent JFK's assassination, Stephen King style?
You know, the butterfly effect might really fuck up with that one. It seems like too major a political event to like be comfortable with what the consequences could be. Because like in theory, I'm like, oh, it could be good, and then like 68 would go differently, and like if we don't get Nixon, like tumbles into like a whole like maybe really good. Or it just fucks shit up and we get like full-blown authoritarian, I can't think of authoritarianism, like early.
That is a really good point.
It's not, just seems like time travel is a bad idea.
Although
You're the late again.
Tabitha's doing great with it right now. So, all right. Well, now that we've discussed the butterfly effect, JFK and teenage awkwardness, I think we should roll our theme song.
Yeah.
Everybody, and welcome to XOXO
XOXO
Riverdale.
Riverdale.
I'm Louis Pearlman.
I'm Kate Batter.
We're back. We're bad.
We're back, baby.
We're better than ever.
Are we?
This is the Riverdale podcast that survived when so many of our fellow podcasters have fallen over the last 7 years.
We're still hanging in there.
We're doing it. We've decided we're going to push through and finish up and do a podcast for every single one of the final episodes of the last season. I believe this is season 7 of Riverdale.
Yeah, you know, having an ending in sight, I think is really going to carry us through here.
I agree. And I think also having an ending in sight is very good for the writers of this show as well.
Oh, yeah. I think it's good for many reasons.
Yes.
I can't think of a bad one.
Absolutely. We're covering today, if you haven't figured it out yet, the season premiere of season 7. It's called Don't Worry, Darling.
Did you see that movie?
I sure did.
It sure was a movie.
Yeah, it was a real mediocre little flick there.
Which, to be fair, now that I'm thinking about it, when Harry Styles called it like a real movie, I'm like, oh yeah, no, he really nailed it.
Yeah, maybe he was trying really hard to just say something nice about it.
Yeah, it sure was a movie.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't a particularly positive experience for him as it for us to watch it, you know?
Yeah. I too would spit on my co-stars over that one.
Yeah, because that's a real thing that definitely happened that the internet didn't decide was a thing.
I know. You know, though, like, they both denied it in the end. Chris Pine, like, really went into what actually happened.
Yes.
And I'm like, you should have really leaned into getting spit on. Like, we were all into it.
It maybe would have been the best way to publicize that otherwise mediocre movie.
Well, all of the publicity for the movie was just drama surrounding it. Like, no one even knew what the movie was about, but it was like, oh, like, Olivia Wilde called her Miss Flo, and in the middle of it, Olivia Wilde went through a divorce, and like all this stuff, and none of it was like, wow, this movie is really good, because it wasn't.
Yeah, because there was very little to say about the actual film.
Yeah, which had potential.
Oh, but... yeah, interesting, cool ideas.
Yeah.
Sort of got lost in the shuffle, which is sort of, you know, like, just to tie it back to this episode today, I think they're laying out a lot of cool ideas that could play out really interestingly this season, but we will see.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like, by the way, I'm Louis Pearlman, in case you're listening for the first time.
I think, didn't we introduce ourselves?
No.
I think we did.
I don't think so.
I think we said XOXO Riverdale, and then you said, I'm Lily Pearlman, and I said, I'm Kate Batter.
Did we, like we always do?
I think we did.
To our 5 listeners that have stuck with us over the last 7 years, we're trying a new, more lackadaisical podcast style now that we're on our final season. This is our victory lap.
Yeah.
So please bear with us while we iron out the kinks.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. No, but I mean, come on. I'm already feeling more relaxed. I don't feel like I have a horse in the game anymore here.
Yeah, knowing that we don't need to like address very specific things.
Yeah.
Also, that means that like, God, this whole episode is so much about Emmett Till.
Yes.
And like, I'm glad they addressed it and they talked about it, but it was also like, felt like it's for people who had never heard of Emmett Till, but it didn't do anything to make it seem like it was a real event if you didn't already know.
That's interesting. Yeah. Like, I do feel like this episode was written like as an Emmett Till history class.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, definitely, like, I think that this is the writer's way of getting into race in a way that they feel will be okay for their audience.
Their audience, which, to be clear, is averages out at age 50.
Yes, because of the people that watch network TV.
Like, a good chunk of the audience, not just network TV, but the CW specifically, skews very, very old. And like, I've
which
seen,
is
like,
so, but it's so weird because the vocal fandoms are younger people still, you know.
It like, feels like that. And then when I think of like who you see still talking about Supernatural, like it's the best show ever. You're like, oh no, yeah, they're really over the hill on this one.
Oh yeah. Well, they haven't moved on, you know, like.
Yeah, and it feels like with this, like there's a good chance that there are people watching who like remember Emmett Till.
Yes, yeah, that were around for sure,
Yeah.
for sure. Yeah. You know, I agree with that, that like it left certain things open to you Googling it after the show was done, which I
I
don't
did,
think
yeah, I
is.
did one Google.
Oh, did you? What was the Google you did?
Tabitha says the moral arc of this universe bends towards justice, and she was like, a real hero of mine said that. And I was like,
MLK.
yeah, I was like, let me make sure, because she set it up in like a real weird way.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, it was a bit of an awkward line. I
Yeah, like
mean,
she
in the
really
world of
presented
Riverdale awkward lines, but you know, it's one of
she
my favorite
presented it like it
quotes.
was going to be Captain America. Like,
As one of my favorite heroes says, up, up, and
yeah.
away.
Tut-tut, looks like rain.
It looks like rain. Yeah. As one of my favorite heroes says, I can do this all day. Also, but something that I thought was cool about that move that the show made is it shows that it is contemporary Tabitha because it was a quote from post 55, which I think is kind of cool. So, you know, we're going to get into it. We're going to talk about this episode. We're going to talk about all the things that stuck out. But before we do, because we've had a big gap between the last episode and this one, let's do some Riverdale fan news. Because Kate is chomping at the bit.
We're gonna go in not a specific, we're gonna, the order we're going in is what I have written down. It's
Yes.
not the order that maybe we even should discuss it in.
No, please. Come on.
I right away want to talk about how Cole is falling apart. Not just like the infamous interview with the cigarette podcast thing, but also like
The
he's
cigarette podcast thing. That's what we need to call it from now on. Cole's famous cigarette podcast.
he's resurrected that Instagram where he takes pictures of people taking pictures of him.
And there was one that was particularly mean.
It was super mean, and there's like several where it's like, I genuinely don't think they're taking a picture of you.
Yeah, they're doing something else.
I think he doesn't know, and it makes sense, but when you have like smaller hands, you have to like, and you're trying to reach something with your thumb on your phone, the whole thing kind of like tilts. Like I have a grabby thing because when I'm just like trying to do it by myself, I have to like really move my hand weird, and I'm like, I feel like maybe they're just trying to play Candy Crush, dude. Like,
For sure. And also like kind of directed at young women, which like
yeah.
is a little like, hey, buddy, like back off here. Like
And in
it's
one
getting
of them,
uncool.
he was saying like the really nasty stuff he was saying was about like the person's friend. Like it wasn't
Yes,
even the
that's
one taking the
right.
picture.
Yeah, like, and who knows what part she played in, you know, the entire unfolding of this person taking a picture of him on the subway.
If she was taking a picture, she may have been like, don't do that.
Absolutely. She could have been like, oh, don't do that. He's gonna read you on the internet. He's famous for it. You
Yeah,
know?
he's famously kind of an asshole. And frankly, everyone I know who went to NYU with them is like, Dylan was great. And then like kind of leaves it open-ended.
Wow. So maybe Cole has been the evil twin for this entire time.
I think he has been. He's been Edgar in the attic, and
It's a shame, you know, and then the other thing about the cigarette podcast that I want to bring up as well is there was an interview with him, I believe in GQ, that we addressed like now about a year ago, where it really talks about how he's chain smoking. And in my brain, I immediately went to, wow, that guy probably just stinks. Because if you're smoking that much, you have bad breath and you're sweating nicotine all the time. And I think that this just confirms it, that he like couldn't do a fucking podcast without like a Virginia Slim in his hand and his fingers.
Like he needed to take a smoke break, and they were like, no.
Well, no, yeah, either they
Just
were like,
smoke
no,
in
or he
here
was like,
instead, which
I
is
don't need
like.
a break. I'll just smoke in your podcast studio,
Which
like
certainly had like fabric walls to like absorb all of it.
the grossest, like yuck. Only other thing I want to say about it, just like kind of a fun shout out plug. But fun crossover for me, my former and perhaps future podcast partner, Kyle Gordon, who I used to do Kick the Jukebox with, did a really funny character video playing Cole Sprouse during that interview that you can look up on the internet.
Oh, man. Yeah, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, it's fun. It's like super fun. And I just really liked that it involved both of my podcasts together. So
yeah, it's all of your interests. It's like when I went to that baseball game and they gave me a bunch of C-SPAN stuff.
Totally. You're like, how did you know?
Oh my God. Is this, you were waiting for me?
Yeah.
Speaking of baseball and C-SPAN stuff, this is like not even necessarily super cast related. And I'm sure you don't recall, but last year when I was doing my fantasy baseball draft, I kept seeing the name Kopech and being like, why is this guy sticking out to me? And it was that it was Vanessa Morgan's like asshole baby daddy.
Yes.
So this year for the draft, I had to leave early. So I was there through like the big expensive players. And then I just let my like co-owner take the wheel because it was just all like dollar people to fill in blanks. And she did pick him up. So he is on my team this year.
Oh, what a burden.
I mean, he hasn't had a start yet. Maybe he'll be bad and I could justify dropping him, but our pitching is famously very, very bad. So if he's good, like, we really got to hang on.
Yeah, you need to hang on to this guy who you have some real moral qualms with.
Yeah, I mean,
who knows? Maybe Vanessa knows. Really just wanted, like, a baby and she's fine with it. We don't know. She hasn't done any asshole interviews on podcasts explaining this, so we don't know.
And I keep almost saying Vanessa Hudgens, who is getting married to a baseball player, but on a different team.
Yes.
And not a pitcher.
Not the same Vanessa.
Yep. Different
Vanessa. Not as talented as our Vanessa.
No.
So, any other big fan news?
Great. Yeah. We saw a bunch of Skeet in Scream 6.
Oh, yes. Yes. Great to have him back. What's your little review of Scream 6?
I liked it. I believe when we talked about it, one of the things we liked is that I'm spoilers ahead for the sixth movie in a franchise. that the girl whose name I already forget, like, never, she sees him, he's her father. And she sees him in like visions almost.
Yeah.
But she never faces a moral qualm with it. She's never like, interesting, maybe I'll give in. She's always just like, God, this is like really annoying. Like, she went to a therapist to like try and get rid of this. Like, which I am liking her, like, not being like, oh, am I evil? Like, in a real Betty Cooper, like, hang up on it way. She's just like, I'm not, and this is annoying.
Yeah. She's more like, I want to move forward with my life.
Yeah.
And this is holding me back. And actually, the events of both of the Scream movies that she's been in
are
basically just holding her back from moving on with her, like, perfectly okay. Like, she's like a fairly well-adjusted character her life. It's not this battle. Am I a psycho? Am I not a psycho? Which is, I agree, it's really cool.
It's so nice. Yeah. There's a lot of people, and we said this before too, in this movie, people who are making good decisions.
Yes.
Like, there's fully a character who I have no notes. Like, he at one point, they were
the
like,
boyfriend?
Yeah. And he was like,
who's from, you know, he's from
the other two.
And he's just like such a fucking delight. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, first, like, I mean, we can sit here and debate cops, but generally, like, when you see a serial killer in someone's apartment, like, it's a smart move to like call the cops and then try and get that person's attention.
Yeah.
And like, the whole way through, he is like, we need help.
Yes.
We should get help. And then they're like, we're going to go like trap them in this building. And he's like, I didn't hear from you within like 5 minutes. So I called the cops. Like, And when she was like, you know, I don't trust you yet. He's like, that makes sense.
Yeah. That was a really cool move. I love that. Where he was like, I respect that. I'm divorcing myself from this situation.
Yeah. And then he just like went and did like a very helpful, good thing.
Yes. Yeah, and what a good character.
I know. I think we need to address more directly that Gail Weathers is a final girl. Well, we always just go straight to Sydney Prescott, but like, she's made it through all the movies. Frankly, more movies than Sydney.
Well, at this point, yeah. Well, Gail Weathers, we'll see what they end up doing with her for the final film. I mean, it feels like they
have they officially made it final? Or are they, we just thinking?
They haven't officially made it final, but to me, this absolutely feels like a second trilogy, you know, like it feels like they're really, they have mapped out three films. I think it would do them a favor by treating the next one like it's a final, like it's actually the final film in the
And
Scream
then
series, regardless of what
if they
happens after.
want to go for a money dig, they can do another one like Scream 4. Because it
Yeah.
will work on me, I'll spend the money,
Well,
but
yeah, Scream 4 is so interesting, you know, because like when it came out, it to me did feel like a money dig. But then
it was several years. It was far enough after
it was
three,
10
too, that
years.
it was
It was
like,
10 years after the one before. And then, but then rewatching it within the context of the rest of the movies, it's really one of the stronger movies in the
it's one of the
franchise.
best ones. Yeah,
It's
four is
good, and
great.
it shows that Kevin Williamson had more to say, and that's really why they made it, is that like, and that is something about these movies, is that they all are commentary on horror as a genre. And there was the first one was a commentary on horror movies, the second one was a commentary on sequels. The third one attempted poorly to be a commentary on horror trilogies because horror trilogies aren't really a thing. So that's the reason why.
There's
Then,
movies, there's franchises with three, but they really fall off by three. No one's like
totally.
celebrating the third one.
Totally. Then the fourth one was a commentary on reboots, which was smart and fun and very insightful. Then the fifth one, which came 9 years after again, which gave us a whole gap where
Really?
horror had changed, yes, was mainly commentary on art house horror, was mainly what it was sort of
They keep bringing up the Babadook.
the modernization of it. And then this one, which came out a year and 2 months later, is not much of a commentary on anything. They try to make it a commentary on that this is now an ongoing series. But once again, the rules for or tropes of an ongoing horror series, there isn't really, that doesn't really exist. They just sort of are these weird meandery franchise monsters. You know, like once you get to like Friday the 13th, part six, it's not like there's any tropes or rules anymore, you know?
It feels like they're playing like with they're doing fun things. Like they don't have a final girl, they have a final like four.
Love that. Yes,
And that's
absolutely.
fun. So it's like they're, but it does feel like they're parroting themselves in that way, but they don't notice that they are.
Yeah, it's super innovative, and I love that they kept the core four alive through the course of that movie, and I love those actors and more than happy to see another film with them. But yeah, it is not, this makes it challenging that these are still Scream movies, because a huge element of what makes those movies work is the meta commentary, and this was certainly the one where I felt they were struggling with that the most, maybe along with Scream 3. Scream 3 level commentary of being like,
I
what are
feel
the
like
rules?
what they took from Scream 3 is that they tried to make it different by having one killer instead of two, and we were all like, no, because that's just normal now. So then they like swung the other way and did three.
Yes, totally, which is fine.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. It
Not
doesn't.
like I didn't find that the most interesting thing about the movie. Another little Scream 3, just a fun Easter egg, is the movie theater that was the closed down movie theater had a few movies playing, and one of the movies was starring Parker Posey's character from Scream 3, which is making fans wonder, did that character survive? And if that character did somehow survive, how great would it be to have a Parker cameo in Scream 9? Is Parker's the best? We love
They're gonna
her.
actually start making this Stab franchise.
I'd watch a some sort of like Showtime limited series that's like a parody of the Scream movies, that is the Stab movies. Like, that's what I would watch. It's like a
It's a
little low
parody of
budget.
like a it's not even a parody, it's just like a real thing.
Yeah.
But like
With all of them playing the characters. Yeah, I'd watch
yeah,
that.
and everyone looks like a little bit like everyone in it. Like it's definitely not like Courtney Cox, but it's someone who kind of looks like Courtney
I'd
Cox.
love that. I think that would be so funny.
Or well, actually I think Courtney Cox could still be in it because they are based off of the Woodsboro murder books that she wrote.
Well,
But
I
everyone
think
else,
she would cameo in them, you know what I
yeah,
mean?
but everyone else would be vague lookalikes.
I'd love to see it be a bunch of like alt comedians. Like, I feel like it'd be
I
really
feel like,
fun.
I mean, listen, they got Tim Robinson basically uncredited in this one. I think comedians would be all in.
All in. Comedians love the Scream franchise.
I kind of think they do, though, and
Yeah.
that we're,
Well,
yeah. I mean,
that's not
Tim
really me being
Robinson's in it.
facetious because they are the funny ones. Like, they're the horror
Yeah.
movies that are really genuinely quite funny all the way
Yeah,
through.
it's hard to
So.
explain to people because they are like very gory and like murdery, but it's like it's actually pretty funny. And it
Totally.
feels like now like A24 is trying to make like horror comedies, and like I actually don't include Jordan Peele in it because I think he has like his own thing going.
No, Jordan Peele. Yeah, he's a whole other
It's
thing. Yeah.
they're funny, but I think he's like much more commentary based than anyone else in horror right now.
Certainly, yeah,
But
really
like,
metatextual, yeah.
yeah, I think they could do more with comedians and it could be even funnier, but it is
Yeah,
funny.
no, I think that would be awesome. I one more last thing to say about this Scream movie, which I'm glad we're talking about because it is very Riverdale related and like very much I think in the same world. The
I
two,
liked when I looped in Betty Cooper personally.
yes, oh my God, I'm very impressed
Felt
with you.
good, felt good.
You know, the reason why Neve Campbell wasn't in the movie is because they gave her a low offer apparently for it, and she asked for more money and said, you know, I'm really worth more at this point and I'm worth more to this franchise. And she is, and
Yeah.
she has held those movies together for so many installments, and I really think they did her dirty. Apparently
Yeah.
the filmmakers were quite disappointed in it as well, in that outcome. So I'm just hoping that they can work something out and she can return for the final,
Yeah.
what will
It
probably
feels
be the
like
final film.
they maybe lowballed her, like she wasn't going to be in it much. And like, she's no longer the final girl. She's a final girl.
Yeah.
But it's like, sorry, she was the final girl for five movies. You gotta, or for
And
four
she
movies,
has
I guess.
such a huge fan following as well.
Yeah,
You know,
this is
just
like,
so many people really love that character, you know, and I was really disappointed that she wasn't in it. And I didn't like the way they wrote her out as well. I thought it was did a disservice to the character.
yeah, which
Yeah.
is, I mean, again, a character making a good decision, but
Yeah,
I wish it
a
wasn't
character making a
her.
good decision, but also a character making like a very out of character decision, especially
Yeah.
after sort of how she behaves in the film previous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I was that was something I wasn't into, but the rest of the movie was pretty dope.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, cool.
All right, more. We've got more.
Okay. Oh, more fan
Yep,
or
I've got
more
several
fan
more things.
news.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Speaking of stars in other things, we watched Charles Melton in History of the World Part 2.
Yes,
I noticed
History of the
that he
World
wasn't in
Part
this, and I
2,
was like,
which was inconsistent but quite delightful.
this is, I had a very long conversation with a friend yesterday about how much we loved it, but also there were parts that just like sucked, but then it was so inconsistent that you had to just keep watching.
Yes, absolutely. And also featured because of the people that produced it, literally 90% of my early 2000s improv coaches.
Yeah. Yeah. There
Yeah.
are a lot of people in it. I think that maybe that's where, I mean, fingers crossed, because it would be fun. That's why Reggie wasn't in this episode. Instead, he was doing a Fiddler on the Roof parody.
Yes. They'll
But
have him
yeah,
come
history.
back in later. Yeah.
Yeah, but come in as Nick Kroll and Pamela Adlon's son,
I
Russian son.
really hope so. Yes, he was really delightful in it, and I'm glad they cast him in it.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that he's who they went with,
Yeah.
because I feel like there's other, like, more comedy based people.
He was funny, though.
He was great. Oh, he was great. I thought he did better than Nick Robinson, who was like the only other person around that age in the movie, in the show.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, totally.
Not that Nick Robinson was bad either, but I think that
No,
I also
but.
think Charles Melton just had a better storyline.
Yeah, Melton also, I do think Melton's really charming, and there have been moments in Riverdale where he's really carried it by just being such a like odd goofball. Like I feel like the him and Hiram eating chips scenes wouldn't have like seriously, they wouldn't have worked as well without
No.
like just like sort of his vibe in the
It's like
scene.
sheer, like, leaned into, like, he committed so hard to those,
Oh
which is what
yeah.
makes comedy good, is you have to commit to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and very genuine and straight-faced as well.
Yeah. It's too bad he wasn't in the absolute best storyline, but that's fine. That was
Which one was
the
your
Curb Your Enthusiasm one.
the cur well the curb one? Yeah, but that one la yeah.
It only happened once. It wasn't even like a through line,
No, it
but
was just a sketch.
they did it so
It
well.
was very well done. It was a very good parody of a comedy, which can be hard to do.
Yeah, oh yeah. It
Yeah.
was perfect, but
Absolutely.
I
Yeah.
think they maybe didn't keep going because it was like a worry that they were going to go off the rails on it, and they had a perfect ending.
It was really one and done. And then they segued into that Let It Be parody for
Yeah.
Jesus, which was funny, but I did like the curb better for sure.
Yeah, the Beatles one
Yeah.
was like,
Or the
that was another
Get
thing we
Back
talked about.
parody. Yeah.
Yeah, that
Yeah.
my friend and I were talking about is how much we love JB Smoove and we're glad they called out the accent, but I feel like they didn't know what they were doing with it.
Agreed. And also that accent joke was very funny. But that being said, I could have used one or two more sketches with the accents because I loved our main man, Black Hood, Richard Kind, doing that Liverpudlian
Mean to bring
accent.
up Richard Kind is also in this. I'm so mad I forgot.
Well, that's what you have me here for.
Yeah.
Any other Riverdale fan news right now?
Boy, is there. Mark Consuelos has another series regular position coming up as the co-host of Live with Kelly and Mark.
Which basically I think that they were referencing as making Hiram and Hermione the quote unquote hosts of a show.
I think they were making them Ricky and Lucy.
Well, I think they were doing both. You know, I think it was
Okay,
a
yeah.
reference to him moving into being a co-host with his wife and then being a co-host with his wife in this very 1950s way, you
Yeah.
know. Yeah.
I think that the show was truly just Lucy and Ricky just based on timing, but he is, yeah, take and I think he'll be fun on live, but I also haven't watched that show in so long.
Yeah, and also,
Except I'm
yeah.
in doctor's offices. I think that's the only place I've
I'm
ever
sure he'll
watched
be
it.
fine. I'm sure he'll be great. I'm wondering if we're going to get a final appearance of both of those characters this season. I have a feeling we will.
Yeah,
We'll
I think
see
we're going to
them
get
one more
them.
time.
Yeah. The only other thing I want to talk about is Yosemite Jughead.
Oh, let's get the fuck into it. We have been texting listeners.
I filled down a hole and it turns out like Looney Tunes have been doing a bunch of those, but they're
Okay.
all. So what Looney Tunes has been doing, the Looney Tunes Instagram account, is taking iconic monologues from movies and having Looney Tunes characters say them.
So there was one, just if our listeners haven't heard it yet, go on to the Looney Tunes Instagram because there's one this week of the Jughead speech. I'm weird, I'm a weirdo, but it's Yosemite Sam doing it, dubbed over footage of Cole Sprouse.
And it's so weird. Like, I was scrolling through a bunch of them, and like, they did the Matrix, like, blue pill, red pill. And I was like, yes, that's an iconic scene. That's why you would pick it up. But like, a bunch of them are like, there's more famous monologues than what they went with. I guess like part of it is maybe getting rights, but like, it's parody enough that I think they could get away with it. I don't. It was very weird.
Yeah. I was wondering that too. I was thinking, are all the properties Warner Brothers owned
Oh,
properties?
maybe.
Well, but
Yeah.
Archie, that's a whole, I mean, it's on the CW, which I do believe is still owned by Warner's. So
Yeah.
maybe
I
it's
think
sort of
it.
it's a cross promotional synergy. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Shitty, it's some city some really shitty Hollywood synergy. I mean, it's definitely some bullshit social media firm who thinks that this is a really great usage of the Looney Tunes characters.
Yeah, I'm gonna see what else. Oh my God, 24 new posts. Jesus Christ, slow down. I'll see what
24
else they did.
new Looney
New
Tunes
posts since
posts.
on the Looney Tunes.
Oh my God. Like, what are they gearing up for over in
Okay,
Looney Tune land?
they use the hashtag WB100.
Yeah, Warner Brothers. Yeah. So it's
Yeah,
like a
so that's what they're
celebration of
doing it.
100 years of Warner Brothers. Okay.
Yeah, they've got the Caddyshack one, which I mean, Caddyshack goes in because Caddyshack was in Space Jam Original, which I think
Yes.
people don't remember because we were all like very young.
Yes. Yeah, but yeah, totally.
There's a Crazy Rich Asians one, there's a Big Bang Theory one, the Willy
Yes.
Wonka one I saw. Christmas Vacation, Jughead. I don't even, there's some in here where like I might figure it out if I turn the sound on, but I don't know what they are offhand. Is this Gilmore Girls? They have a Gilmore Girls that's Bugs Bunny. They have the Scooby-Doo live action with Yosemite Sam and Porky Pig. It, the new one, a Batman, Friends. Like they really Goonies, but like not the
Well, I hope
stuff
those
from
voice
Goonies that you would
actors just
expect.
made bank and did, you know, an hour of work each in the studio, and like that it was a good little project for them because it's very weird and it feels very social media 2023 in a way that
Yeah.
is like completely boring and unremarkable, right?
Yeah, like they're going with such weird, like, it's just weird choices.
Yeah, agreed.
Huh.
100%.
Yep. So that's all I've got. But I did repost Yosemite Jughead to our Instagram, but it was as a story. So if you missed it, too bad. Go to Looney Tunes.
If you like this, you know. This Jughead speech by Yosemite Sam, everyone's favorite fucking Looney Tunes character,
Yeah.
tweeted us. Let's start a dialogue.
Yeah. I think honestly, if you any opinion about Yosemite Sam, we'll take.
I want to know
I
how do you care about this 70-year-old cartoon character that is sort of stereotypical of certain tropes about the South that maybe we're trying to, you know, have them stop being a thing? I don't know.
was trying to remember why I was thinking about Yosemite Sam recently, and the only reason I was is like you can find like old baseball memorabilia, and the 1996 Yankees signed a Yosemite Sam cell. And like, I don't
Is
like,
it him
I don't,
dressed as a Yankee?
I think he might be playing baseball, maybe, but it is like, why did this happen? And if I had the money, I would 100% buy it because why did this
And
happen?
also, Yosemite Sam would canonically hate the Yankees as a team. He would not be into it.
No,
Like,
it,
Yosemite Sam, that's sort of the joke about him, is he's sort of a he's a like frozen in amber. Like Confederate soldier,
he'd be
right?
into the
Like,
Braves.
yeah, he'd love the Braves.
You would love the Braves.
Exactly. He's not an urbane Southerner like Foghorn Leghorn, who is a man of sophistication and taste.
Know, now that I'm saying this, the cell was Foghorn Leghorn.
That makes much more sense. Okay.
It still, though, to be clear, doesn't make a ton of sense. It just, I mean, the Yankees won the World Series that year, so I guess they were just going to have whoever won sign it. But I should see if other teams did it. It's just the Yankees won a lot in a row, so it's hard to find out.
All right, so let's get into this season premiere. Let's talk about our thoughts about it. Did you like it overall?
It was just so, I mean, when you think of like pilot episodes and how much they struggle because they're like trying to set too much up, it felt like they were repiloting.
Interesting, interesting. I like this episode. I thought this was a very strong season premiere from them, actually. And I thought I'm gonna just mildly disagree with you. I'm gonna make the argument that because we already know all these characters so well, that carried us through the fact that they were introducing a lot. Because
Yeah,
we
I mean
already
that did.
get the tropes of these guys and how they
Yeah.
behave. Yeah.
I think why I felt like they were repiloting is because they were like setting up the set the way, you know, New York City is a character on Sex and City. They were like kind of resetting up Riverdale because they kept talking about the James Dean accident as well.
Yes.
And
I thought they were doing that mainly to sort of show the difference between what white kids were going through at the time and what black kids were going through at the time.
yeah, I think they were. Also, it did mean that we got that great monologue from Mary about why she didn't want Archie driving his car, which includes the very serious, very scary aspect of it, which is that there are flames painted on the car.
So, yeah, okay. So here's something about this is a bigger conversation I was thinking about. So we have these characters that in the modern world are queer, and in the world of Riverdale 55, they of course are closeted, which makes a lot of sense, of course. I'm wondering if there's going to be an arc where they all undergo some sort of sexual awakening as the season goes on. Like, how long is Kevin going to be dating Betty, you know? And Mary is this is such a different portrayal for her. You know, this is 1950s housewife as opposed to cool queer lawyer, Chicago lawyer. You know, this is different. So I'm curious to see if we allow these characters to, pardon the pun, real like really not intended, to blossom. Cheryl's another one. You know, it's like I'm curious. I'm interested to see how that all pans out this season. From a queer perspective, still don't know if Molly Ringwald really is good. Didn't feel like she was particularly good in this episode.
What has she been, though, you know?
Well, I mean, she was very charming as a teenager, but maybe it was her charm that made her such an icon in those movies more than acting ability. I don't know. You know, because yeah, I mean, Riverdale's always been kind of a slog for her, it feels like. So, something else, you know, that I want to bring up, speaking of the parents, is thrilled to have all these cast members back, perhaps as semi-reoccurring or reoccurring. Particularly thought Lachlan Monroe's performance in this episode was great and a change for him, which I really liked. Very into that. Just thought it was cool. Yeah.
I want to jump back to the queer discussion for a second to
Sure, yeah,
discuss.
sure. Sorry.
It also goes back to our butterfly effect conversation, which is that
Yes.
the time capsule made it, which I think is like actually maybe going to play into like more stuff, like not just the time capsule, but they're going to find other things. Like,
Oh yeah, definitely there's gonna
I
be
think,
chronal
yeah,
inconsistencies.
the bunker's going to be there.
Oh,
I'm
I'm sure you're
convinced.
right. Speaking of the bunker, this would have been a great little episode to reintroduce because
Dalton
he's a
Doyle.
very 1950s character, Dilton, in terms of the way the character's portrayed in the Archie comics. And I'd like to see more of Dilton, but I don't know if we're gonna get that.
But because the Jughead brought the time capsule back up, which didn't really have anything that like it had like a hammer which like existed in the
Thank you for
fifties.
that historical note.
But what it did have that was modern was not that there was a playbill. There were playbills, but it was for Kevin's production of Hedwig and the Angry Inch. And he did say like an inch of what? And I was like, explain it. Do
I
it.
thought that was a funny joke.
I thought it was too, but it was like, I wish they went harder into it.
Well,
But
Jughead behaves really interestingly in that scene overall when it comes to Kevin, and in a way that is very motivated from kindness. But they're all like, well, what happened to me in the future? Or what happens to me? And when it comes to Kevin, Jughead's like, I literally don't want to destroy this man's life.
And what he says about Archie is that he says you're really violent in the future.
Which felt like someone was listening to our podcast and wrote it in.
It was very funny.
I mean, that whole scene, all the shit that Jughead says, felt like it was really fun fan service, where it was the show acknowledging we know this has all been crazy and we're just gonna have a lot of fun with it, which I thought was great. Yeah. Speaking of which, you know, not that we're very thrilled with him right now, IRL, but Cole seemed to be having a blast in this episode. And it's always nice when Cole Sprouse is having fun, the show is like 90% more fun.
Yeah, that's why, like, at the end, I kind of don't like that Tabitha kissed away his memories.
Oh,
Because I'm
I
like,
thought that was a real garbage move. I'd rather have
yeah.
him be an ally with Tabitha, having to move through this. I think that's much more interesting for the
I
writing
think
and
him
for the
playing with his
character.
awareness and, yeah, being concerned about butterfly effects, but also, like, I was thinking, like, the hammer Archie had from the 50s, like, was that the same one as what was in the time capsule? Like, do we have double hammer?
Yeah, and does
Which,
double hammer create like,
a
some sort
loop.
of loop or
Yeah.
vortex that destroys, yeah,
Yeah.
the fabric of reality?
Because there were two Tabithas.
Yeah,
But
and as long as Tabitha 55 doesn't meet Tabitha 23, does that mean that we're okay?
yeah.
I guess that's the rules they're playing with here. We'll see if they negate their own rules, but like that did feel like clear enough that I wasn't like, what the fuck is this? Which we've really criticized the show for in the past. And this I'm cool with. I'm cool with the way they laid this out. Yeah.
And it feels like they have 55 Tabitha like going on like a civil rights march with her parents, which feels like a way for them to be like, the Tabithas aren't going to run into each other. But I think 23 Tabitha might like find a way to stick around
Yeah,
and she'll be the aware one.
maybe Tabitha 23 will dress as Tabitha 55.
But
Another thing about the entire episode, and maybe this season, I think that this is the writers trying to respond to like MAGA ideology, the things were better back in the day. I think they're leaning really hard into the fact that the
But
50s
they're not.
were very tumultuous. Yeah, and were only good for a small handful of people, and all those people were repressed, and a lot of them were super unhappy as well. That it's a fake version of America. So I thought that was cool that it wasn't this like happy-go-lucky Happy Days 50s, although they referenced Happy Days in the opening, like that wasn't the point, you know?
It does feel like, in a weird way, that they're definitely doing that, but they also haven't done their research on it, which is why they're just like only doing Emmett Till.
Or I'm gonna argue, or focusing on it for now, maybe other historical
Yeah, I mean, this
issues will
episode
sort of
one.
pop up as the season goes on. We'll see. We'll see. You might be right. I mean, knowing this show, you're probably right that it's just gonna be like, we're just gonna deal with Emmett Till, and that's how we're dealing with, that's how we're dealing with this.
Yeah, they're not gonna just like, it feels like there's things like, so Fred died in this one, he died in Korea.
Yes.
And I feel like they're not gonna address things like that. Mary can't get a credit line because she's a woman. And it's like, because how are you gonna write that in? But like, it does feel like they're maybe not sure how to do some of the stuff that makes the 50s bad.
Also, in addition to that, I think the credit line is a great example. Here we've got 1955, where there are two Latinx co-hosts of the most popular show on TV. And certainly that does reference the fact that, Ricky was such an innovator and really pushed the envelope as to having someone on TV who was married. It was an interracial marriage, and it was cool at the time. I Love Lucy, that's fine, but there isn't an analogous situation in the 50s where there was two Latinx people on TV hosting a show that was the most popular show, and that their daughter was considered a starlet. Like, that is sort of pushing what was acceptable in the 50s when it came to portrayals of people, representation of people on TV. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, totally. Anyway.
In the famous show, Oh Mija.
Yes. Yeah, that's another thing, too. That was something. Thank you for bringing that up. The term Mija would be used in in the title of a like 1955 TV show. Like, I'm sorry, I don't think so.
No,
Yeah, white
absolutely
people
not.
would not have gone for that. The sponsors would not have gone for that in the
Right, and
50s. Yeah.
the sponsors for everything in this are the Blossoms maple syrup.
Yeah, which I think is great. I think that's really fun because the Blossoms are pre-time jump, absolutely the waspiest thing about Riverdale, so
And
makes a lot
Cheryl
of sense.
immediately betrays them. And also, they have Julian instead of, I can't think of his name.
Instead
Jason?
of Jason, yeah.
And like, I'm really bummed out for the Jason actor.
No, I'm wondering if maybe he wasn't available or if something
Or
they,
they're going to bring him back in some way.
yeah, or they wanted to do, they wanted to go a different direction and they, whatever they want to do with Jason, they couldn't do. So they're using Julian. I think there's something going on there that's beyond just them being like, we don't want to work with this actor. Like, 'cause he has been on and off of that show in this
So
weird
much with
stand-in role.
no lines, but
Yeah,
like,
so
pretty sure he
I
gets.
think they dig him unless he's been cast in something, he's not available, something's going on, you know.
Yes.
You know, I really enjoyed Julian. I thought that that actor was really good. I'm looking forward to seeing more of him. Also, totally cute, real redhead. What a dream for me to finally have a nice redhead boy on this show instead of poor KJ with his weird dyed hair.
Oh
And
yeah. I think even Jason had like fake red.
yeah, this is the first redhead we've seen on the show. And
Besides
also,
Cheryl.
loved, you know, this is the haunted doll brought to life, and that in itself is very funny that
Yeah.
he's now a character on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. What else do I want to say about this episode? I'm just going through my notes here, stuff that's important. Just a few more fun things about the scene where they are talking about James Dean and Veronica sharing the hot goss that James Dean, you know,
Jim.
was, huh?
Her friend Jim.
Yes, her friend Jim was bisexual. That was all really fun. And then just a great, funny reference that's literally for the campy gays and for no one else. After that, Kevin asks about Sal Mineo, who was famously very early out of the closet in the late 60s and was, you know, James Dean's co-star in Rebel Without a Cause. Absolute gorgeous heartthrob of a gay man movie star who was very sadly murdered, you know, and lived an out of the closet lifestyle and was killed. And I thought that was a really fun cultural shout out that was a great, like, when Riverdale does it right. Like, I thought that was awesome. And then also, we had this child psychologist, who I want to talk a little bit about, Dr. Werthers. So he is a direct reference. Some of the things he says are a direct reference to Dr. Frederick Wortham, who we've talked a little bit on the show before. He wrote a book in the 50s that was called Seduction of the Innocent and was specifically about how comic books were corrupting the youth of America. And he wrote a lot about the violence in crime and horror comics, which were really for an older audience, then also wrote about how Wonder Woman was a lesbian and how Batman and Robin were clearly gay and all this shit. And that led to a bunch of congressional hearings about comic books and their suitability for children and led to the creation of the Comics Code. Archie really survived pretty unscathed through all of this, despite the fact that in the 50s and into the 60s, there are certain elements to those comics that are hugely salacious, where specifically the women are very much drawn to be sort of titillating cheesecake characters, you know. But because the comics were for kids, they sort of got a pass. They were able to sort of be like,
Which
no, we're
the
fine.
opposite of like
Yeah,
what you'll see them
seriously,
do.
like those actually were the comics that maybe people should have been looking at and just been like, you know, are these actually appropriate for my 8-year-old to be reading, you know, the
Yeah.
portrayals. And so that I think them playing with that is really fun, and I'm into it. And I love that he's clearly going to be hopefully a recurring villain over the season. I'd love it if a shitty 50s child psychologist is like the foil for
Yeah.
these kids. I think that's super fun. Yeah.
I wanted to bring up that Vanessa Morgan is Canadian and they didn't try to make her sound American despite her, a lot of the plot having to do with American history.
Her
Pronunciation of
accent
sorrow.
in this episode was very Canadian.
Yeah. And she said like sorrow once, and I was like, all right. And then she said it like three more times, and I was like, it really feels like they should have like tried on this one.
Yes.
I also, going back to living out, this is like almost completely off point. Do you know the history of the high five?
No.
Okay.
Interesting.
Do you guess like around what year it was invented?
I'm guessing it's a mid-70s thing, and I'm guessing it is a specifically black street culture thing, because it seems like something that we would co-opt
So it was
as a bigger culture.
1980.
Oh, okay.
And
So I was pretty close.
yeah, it was created by two baseball players, one who currently manages the Houston Astros,
Cool.
and then the first out athlete whose name I can't remember, which is really annoying, but he was out in the MLB at the time.
And were they
And
people
like,
of color?
yeah.
Of course. This just
And
feels like a cool, okay.
they have like a short documentary on ESPN about him. They're talking to Dusty Baker, who's the other guy who he's the manager who now has a World Series win. But
Because it happens in this episode, right?
yeah, I think it does. But like,
Who do Archie and Juggy high five? I believe.
remember.
Yeah, but I do believe there's a high five in this.
Yeah, and I think that the high five a lot of times feels a lot older than it actually is.
Yes.
But yeah, the other person, one of the two guys who invented the high five, which was like an accident apparently that just stuck, was out at the time and kind of pushed out of the MLB as a result. And then he died from AIDS in the early 90s, but it was
Interesting.
like everyone knew. Everyone knew. And it wasn't, I mean, Dusty Baker was like, it wasn't a thing for me. I didn't care. And his teammates didn't. But then now, like, I mean, hockey's really been setting the precedent right now of like homophobia.
Oh, yeah.
But baseball, like, it's the biggest league. They have more athletes than any of the other sports by like a lot. And there's right now one player in the minors who said he's bi, and that's it. Which means there is still probably something in the culture there that like
Oh, for sure.
has like totally reneged on 80s Dodgers.
Well, 80s Dodgers might have been an outlier, but maybe sort of a path to the future. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Dusty Baker's still around. He still has a lot of influence.
Yeah.
A lot of guys from that time are managing, but it is like feels weird that it's still like taboo in baseball.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, of course, I mean, we're gonna delve into our big the things that we notice through our lens, through our interests. Something that I noticed is Archie's use of the term Shazam, famously from Captain Marvel comics, which were very popular in the 40s and 50s. Like, he was the most popular comic character, so totally makes sense.
Yeah.
But a funny reference for now with what is happening culturally with that movie. And what's his face is flame, like
Zach Levi.
total, yeah, Zachary Levi's a total bizarre flame out that
Yeah.
probably when they wrote it, they were like, this is great. That movie will have just come out. You know, this all sort of ties together. It'll jog people's memories. But in reality, a bit of a cringy moment to hear Archie say Shazam.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of how that movie's doing. Also, Veronica on the phone with her mom while she's alone at the Pembroke. Do we think that was Marisol Nichols doing a cameo? I don't think it
It
was.
didn't sound like her.
It
No, I don't.
literally
Yeah.
didn't sound like her at all.
And what's interesting about that is that being on the other end of a phone call is very easy to film.
Totally.
Like,
Yeah, I
if she
was
could be super
surprised.
busy and throw that in,
Or
like.
maybe it was Marisol Nichols doing a really fun transatlantic style 1950s lady voice, but
Yeah.
it really didn't sound like her, which kind of surprised me. And then she ended the call by saying, I have to go, your Uncle Orson is
I know,
here.
yeah. I did write Uncle
It's like,
Orson.
oh, they're friends with Orson Welles. What a treat.
So I thought that, and then I was like, it could just be someone else named Orson.
No, I mean,
But Orson
come
Welles.
on.
But other fun references was that they were living in Vincent Price's old mansion.
Yes.
They're living at Surprise's old mansion, and that they stayed at the Hotel Marmaduke.
Yes. Thank you for pointing those out. One more thing about Orson Welles. Wouldn't it have been so fucking great for them to hire Maurice LaMarche to pop on the phone at the end of that call and been like, "Hello, Veronica, I hope you're well." Just have that be the end of the call.
What year was the War of the Worlds radio broadcast?
I believe that was in the mid to late 40s.
Man.
Yeah, feel free to look it up on your phone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I believe that's the case. Yeah. Yeah, the War of the Worlds podcast,
1938,
famously
yeah.
1938. Yep.
But they could do something like that.
Oh, that would be awesome. Well, I hope that they do something with alien hysteria because that was a big 1950s thing. So
Yeah.
I hope they do something with that in this season. I know they've dealt with the Mothman before and all that, but I think they could do something kind of fun and different with it. We'll
Yeah.
see. Interesting that they can talk about the pictures of Emmett Till, but they choose not to have them in the episode. Like that's taking it a step too far in terms of social responsibility or something like that. I thought that was I thought that was all kind of weird.
Yeah, I feel like they may get backlash from the censors if they'd showed them, because
Yeah.
the show is supposed to be for teens.
Yeah, well it has that rating and everything. Maybe it's
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, that may
And
it
like,
may
I think
be.
it's not that they don't think it's important. It's that like there's like a set amount of like violence you can show and like a
Yeah.
set amount of curse words before they have to change the rating. So it feels maybe like they weren't doing it because they thought they were too gruesome, but because it was just gonna like take too much.
Yeah, maybe it was over the edge. It's definitely
Yeah.
a possibility. Loved Jughead's awesome slip when he said awesome to Tabitha,
Yeah.
and she looked at him really weirdly, and he went, I mean, would he say, I
Neato or
mean,
something?
yeah, or like keen, something
Yeah.
like that. That was really fun. Loved the reading of the Langston Hughes poem. Also, interestingly, I don't know if you noticed this or thought this was great use of the world they've created. When the Langston Hughes poem mentions the body in the river, they cut specifically to Julian Blossom bristling,
Yeah.
which is so smart and cool to sort of tie it into the core thread of how this entire show started. I thought that
Yeah.
was very cool.
Also, what a cool, fun English teacher.
Yes.
Imagine if an English teacher tried that shit today.
Well, it depends on what school district and it depends
What
on what's
state they're
in what
in.
state,
Yeah.
which also I think that entire sort of element to can we teach this, can we teach that, what's going on with all of this, I did feel was very much a reaction to what is happening in schools currently,
I
for
still
sure.
think, too, that. I mean, there's states where that teacher would be like fired instantly. I still think in almost all 50 states, if not all of them, it would be like a discussion. Like there'd be one parent who would complain, one or two, and they'd have to have like a sit down and like a strike against them.
Yes, but
And they would
not
have to,
anything beyond that. Yeah.
yeah, I don't think they'd lose their job, but it would be like a serious discussion about kids, teachers trying to like make their kids liberal.
Yeah.
Which is so,
Oh my
there was a
fucking
line where they
God.
said, when they were talking about Emmett Till, where they said stuff like that doesn't happen in Riverdale.
Yes.
And I think that, I mean, in a way, like, doesn't. I mean, they constantly have bodies washing up on shore, but nothing seemed like particularly race motivated in Riverdale. But I think that's part of like the issue even now today is that people are saying like this doesn't happen in our town. And it's like it does. It does.
Well, yeah, I mean, very complex hole the writers have dug themselves into because, yes, something about the show is that it's always tried its best to be as pretty racially progressive, especially after Ashley Murray spoke out,
Yeah.
rightfully so. And there, we've talked about this before, there have been plot lines regarding the Serpents that sort of tie into issues with indigenous peoples, which is really, really cool. And I don't think has been handled that poorly. Maybe not amazing, but it hasn't been awful. But then what the problem is that they have tried to create sort of this diverse place where people are judged on their merits. And then if they do want to handle anything more directly racially, they kind of become inconsistency with themselves. Yeah, and that's hard. So like I actually kind of commend them for like how they're moving into this Emmett Till subplot in this, because it's actually the most direct way they've ever dealt with any of that on the show. But I'm sure there will be stuff that they do in the next few episodes that we think is cool with it, and stuff they do in the next few episodes that we are like, oh no, what did you do? Because that's Riverdale, baby.
Riverdale, baby.
And then also like something that I think is going to be what the show maybe should have been all along in this season is all of the characters are acting very on brand for their comic book counterparts for the most part. Not a modern character like Kevin, who's always been out of the closet, but certainly Betty is, Archie is, Veronica is. And I think this season is going to delve into how the real world makes the characters more complex, how real world issues makes the makes how do the characters react to that, which is really fascinating and is much more interesting way to go about the show than Archie's banging his teacher. So kudos to them to took them
They're
seven
trying it.
seasons, but for them to figure it out. And I hope that, they're kind of going to go out guns blazing here. We'll see. And only other thing in my notes that I have is the final scene with Tabitha. She alluded to the fact that she's sort of traversing through these alternate timelines. And I'm hoping that we're going to get several episodes that take place in a bunch of different alternate history Archie worlds. Because how fun for the seventh season, maybe there can be a zombie episode. Maybe there can be a are you know, this is wishful thinking. I don't think they're going to do this, but I have to say this on my own podcast. Maybe there will be a 1969 bubblegum recreation of the cartoon show. I'd like to see that in this season if she's going to be moving through these timelines. I hope they have fun with it, and I hope that it leads to a great conclusion for us because we've been doing this for so long. Are
All
we
right,
ready
who's on
for
your power list?
okay yeah I'm ready for Power List. Personally, Power List for me is Cheryl, Mr. Featherhead, and Tabitha. Tabitha 23.
I have hot dog at the top.
I mean, if we get more hot dog this season and Jughead has to take care of him, dream come true for me.
Would love more hot dog.
Love it.
And then I have Tabitha 23, and then Jughead, and then Tony, and then Betty, and then Cheryl.
Yes, love
It
it.
feels like after like Tabitha and Jughead are like very important to the plot, and then the other three are just like moving and shaking in this episode.
And who's on your crush list?
I only have two,
Who?
and I have Tabitha and Tony.
Love it. Yes, good looks for both of them in this episode. Very cool. Loved Tony's cool 50s haircut. Loved it. My crush list is number one, Julian, because I'm
Of
just
course.
love the redheads. Number two, because of her hat game, Veronica.
Good hat game,
And number three, because they made her look super cool and very in character. Just think they're doing, they've been doing some great work with her last season and this one, Betty. So next week, what are we in the what's happening here?
Chapter 119, Skip, Hop, and Thump.
Okay, cool. Not the name of a movie or anything, but that's fine.
And before we leave, we want to give congratulations to our former editor, Alicia Camden. She had a little
Yeah, she
baby.
had a baby. Congratulations, Alicia. And thanks to our editor, Anjali Mercado, for editing this.
And our theme songwriter, Louis Aronowitz,
Yeah.
who probably forgot he did this by now.
He did, but I remind him occasionally on social media.
Yeah, I have like brought it up occasionally.
Definitely, if you want to keep the convo going, hit us up on social media. We're always happy to hear from people and talk about, how they're feeling about episodes.
Especially your Looney Tunes takes.
Especially your Looney Tunes takes. Yeah, like we're
If you want to
happy.
get in it, I can defend Space Jam 2 so hard, and I'm happy to do it if you ask.
Yeah. Maybe next episode will be a Space Jam episode.
Oh, I'd love it.
Yeah.
Someone pointed out, side note, do you watch the show Yellow Jackets?
I don't because I don't
Showtime.
have Showtime on streaming, but
Someone
I know
did point
it's
out
really
that
good.
they're trying, like, this whole year they're trying to survive in the woods is 1996, which means canonically none of these people got to see Space Jam in theaters. And
Very sad.
I was like, yeah, I mean, what a miss.
Yeah, no Space Jam, no Mars Attacks, all my favorites from that year.
Fun little story, Mars Attacks scared me so much I went into a screening of Space Jam next to it.
I saw a double feature that was when they used to do sneak previews, late night sneak previews of movies before it opened. I saw Space Jam and then stayed at the theater for Mars Attacks. One of the best double features of my life, hands down.
Yeah, I still have not rewatched Mars Attacks. I hear it's a comedy, but when I was that age, it was not.
Yeah, way too scary for a little
Yeah.
girl. I totally get it.
And
Yeah.
I still like, I tried to watch and like, I mean, here I am talking about Scream for like an hour,
Yeah,
but
but
like, I
Mars
still
Attacks
like
is too
have like a
scary.
deep set like upset when I see Mars Attacks aliens.
Yeah, Tim Burton, scary guy.
Yep.
Well, thanks. I just want to say, like, thanks to our like few listeners that have been sticking with us for so long. And, we're really gonna have a very fun, very chill season. So if you want some chill Riverdale recaps, it's the place to be.
Yeah, I did. I realized after I was texting my friend when I made you hold for my text is that I think she does still listen. So, like, shout out to Becca.
Sweet. Love you, Becca.
We love Becca.
All right, for XOXO Riverdale, I'm Louis Pearlman.
I'm Kate Batter.
Bye.
Bye.